This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So we received an email from a listener asking us to do a show on op shops. Now, regular listeners would know that this is a topic very close to my heart, and I am somewhat an expert on op shops. But in particular, they wanted us to look into why op shops seem to have become so expensive. Have you noticed the same thing? Maybe donated items with huge price tags. So you have to start to ask why. Why are we seeing a rise in some particular areas on some particular items? Does it depend on where you live? Are there different prices for different suburbs and towns? And does the role of an op shop, their profits, and how those profits are distributed, does that change depending on what the community needs? Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning. Kirsten Dipro is joining you from ABC Warrnambool. Kirsten, I love op shopping. It started very differently to why I do it now, but it's something that is just in my blood. But the role of an op shop and what an op shop gives back to a community and how it helps people, I feel like that is changing and changing a lot, and it will depend on where you live. So, for example, in Omeo, during the fires quite a few years ago now, the local op shop there, where I did get a pair of circa 1970 gold stilettos for $3, ooh, just quietly, they, on average, that particular op shop, the only one in town, raises $50,000 a year for that town. And then every year they figure out how to best use those funds. So it might be, say, the local footy club might need it, or whatever it may be, a school, another charity. So what Omeo does is vastly different to, say, an op shop in a big suburb of Melbourne.
Yeah, and look, Rochelle, I have to say I'm a bit sus on whether this email is real. I'd like to see the veracity of it.
It is real.
I'm just wondering if you put it yourself, because you are such an op shopper. And it's really interesting. I'm not. Like, I donate to op shops, and I'd probably only go in them to buy something maybe once a year, if that.
Wow.
And so this was news to me that it's so expensive in Melbourne. But as we're going to hear about why and where that money's going to, it's a really interesting discussion, because the op shops in my regional towns around me, most of them are still your traditional kind of op shop that we've had for decades.
Yeah, that's right, where you still got pants $2, you know, on Wednesday, green tags are half price. This is the thing, though. Once upon a time, you went to an op shop for clothes, especially if you were a family or an individual in need. You might need school clothes, you might need a jacket for a job interview, you just might need everyday clothes. I feel like now in a lot of areas across Victoria, that's changed. We've got other shops that offer really cheap clothes, which is a whole other debate as to whether or not, you know, they are ethical and sustainable and all of that goes inside cheap clothing and fast fashion. But you do have options now. So is the role of an op shop maybe to get the best possible price for an item, especially if it is of worth, so that that money can then go back into the community and can help people? It can help put food on the table. It can help with cost of living. So does what we charge and does the role of an op shop, does that change?
But where do you go if you do need clothes, if you do need cutlery or stuff for your house? I mean, Rochelle, why did you start op shopping in the first place?
Well, because we had to. So in the 80s, would have been late 80s, parents separated, all of a sudden single mum, no income, all of the issues that come with, you know, a woman that is going through a divorce. So we started op shopping because we had to, and mum and I would leg it down from Moi, but we knew all the good op shops in Melbourne. So we would drive Glenfrey Road, Hawthorne, you know, we'd go to Kew, Elsternwick, all of the fancy suburbs, and we would op shop then because we had to, but we didn't tell anyone. So we had no one had any idea that we were shopping at op shops.
But so then, you wouldn't shop locally, is that because you didn't want to be seen?
They weren't very good. actually. You couldn't find good stuff. And I still wanted to look trendy and fashionable, right? I was 14 years old, wanted to look like all of the other girls. And then that just slowly morphed into what would someone call an obsession. And I still, well, look, I lived through the 90s as well, right, where grunge was really trendy. And that's when op shopping actually became a thing and people started doing it and wearing it as a badge of honour. And in the 90s, you started to see big charities like the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, for example, opened up their Hunter and Gatherer arm, which was a separate shop altogether of op shops, but it was the trendy stuff. It was the retro stuff. So you started to see charities embrace that people were doing it for fashion reasons and understand that it wasn't always just those who are in need. So there's a lot that kind of goes into op shopping and who goes into an op shop now. But I think the reasons as to why people enter an op shop is vastly different to, say, how it was decades ago. Absolutely.
I mean, op shopping for me as in the 90s when I was a kid, it was like I didn't like... Like, my mum wouldn't be seen dead in them. Like, I used to like them because there were, like, affordable, fun things in there. But it was my mum once accidentally threw out my new school uniform to the op shop, and then we had to go into the op shop to buy it back. And she was sort of like, didn't want anyone to see her. And it's really funny how the culture's changed, though, whereas now I don't think there's any kind of shame about being seen in your local op shop. Whereas I think there was, like, I felt that as a kid, you know, the one or two times that we had to go in there.
And a lot has changed over the years in terms of needing volunteers. As we said, how the money is distributed. We know now that charities, people are relying on charities more than ever before with cost of living. So ultimately, do we want these charities to make as much money as possible? But does the role of an op shop, does that change depending on where you live, your community and the needs of that community? Or do you agree with the email that came in to us? Are op shops becoming just too expensive? Should it be about raising revenue for the charity or supplying clothes and goods for people who need it? What role does your local op shop play in your community? I feel like I'm going to make a list, right, of really good places that I'm going to hit over the next few weeks.
You already know, and I asked you off air, can you tell what the good ones are in Melbourne? Like, what are the good ones? And you went all funny, like your face was all like, no, I can't tell you.
I can tell, right? I can tell from the front window. I can tell from their display. I can tell from the age of the op shop. I can tell from the signs. I can tell from the volunteers. The more cluttered the op shop, the better the treasures you're going to find,
as my mum and I would say. Really overwhelming. So that's probably why I don't op shop very often, because you walk in and the clutter stresses me out.
No, Mum and I used to grab each other's hands and we'd be like, because we would get nerves, right? We'd get butterflies in our belly before we'd walk into an op shop that we knew was going to be really great. This text, Michelle and Kirsten, there's an op shop in Diamond Creek. It's run by the Austin Hospital Auxiliary. All the money raised there goes back into a chosen project at that particular hospital. And others saying, I thought op shops provided low-cost clothing to those in need, but then wealthier fashion conscious snap up those clothes, and that's something that can be tricky. So what do you think the role of your local op shop should play? Is it about generating as much money as possible and then being able to find ways to donate that money back in? Or should it be about providing really cheap clothing and goods for those who need it? Cassandra's in Sunbury. She says, I volunteer at a local op shop. Prices range from really cheap for many things to really expensive for designer label items. Expensive prices are put onto designer items. There's always some negotiation on price, though. We have resellers come up and buy and on-sell those items. Now, this is something that didn't exist a long time ago, and it's something now that charities actually need to either embrace or at least accept. Liz Randall is the acting co-executive general manager of commercial services at St. Vincent de Paul. Liz, a warm welcome to the Conversation Hour.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Over the last 30 years or so, the role and the image of op shops, or as one tech said, Rish, the kids don't call it op shopping anymore, they call it thrifting. But the role of op shops and what their job is to service the community, has that changed?
Well, I don't think it's changed. I think it's expanded. Certainly some of the points that you were bringing in before come to mind. You've got now the younger customer who is into us for the unique and the quirky. A lot of customers come to us for a one-off. A lot of customers, they come to us because we have deliveries, so to speak, every minute of every day in every store. So we get new stock in all stores all the time. So that is a reason to shop. And, of course, the newcomer on the block is going to be those that are has sustainability at the back of their mind. That we see in the last few years especially has really become quite a driver for the customers. And hence they come into us not just to purchase but also to donate, to make sure that their items, their pre-loved items, are maintained in the circular economy.
Liz, is there ever too much? I went into an op shop in Hamilton just yesterday to donate a couple of bags of things and they said that they were full. They ended up taking my stuff because I'm from out of town. But
yeah,
what do you do? Do you have too much stuff?
No, we don't have too much stuff. Can I just say that? No, we do not. We embrace donations and we are very well set up for, you know, there are ebbs and flows, absolutely, in the donation belt, so to speak, throughout the year. We become very quiet for donations, more so in winter. But what we have is the facilities to maintain a fabulous supply to all our stores. We have some big warehouses there that we will send back or we will reallocate from one store to another for those that experience a high rate of donations, to those that sometimes don't get the same volumes, perhaps others.
And some of us, like me, that's got 3-4 bags in the back of my boot at the moment. But look, you know, chances are I'm going to pop in at some stage during the week like I normally do. Hey, Liz, stay with us. Gillian's in Lyndhurst. Good morning.
Good morning, ladies. My story is my hubby and I are just recently back from a trip in our caravan around Australia. We travelled anti-clockwise and nearly every small town that we passed or visited or stayed in, or the big towns, we went to the op shop.
Mm-hmm.
And like Rochelle, I'm a bit obsessive, and my husband gets books to read. And being in a caravan, I had to limit my trip to very small little bits and pieces. But the best experience was talking to the volunteers in these small little town halls, towns, and sometimes I'd get to chat to the other customers, but mostly talking to the volunteers who were behind the counters.
Absolutely. It's so great for a little natter and finding those little gems. Did you find some good stuff, Gillian?
I found some fabulous earrings along the way.
Oh, nice. Good on you.
They fitted nicely in the caravan space.
I reckon you can get the vibe of a town. I'll always remember when I moved to the farm 10 years ago and packed up my house in Melbourne. So I did a bit of a clear out, donated all this stuff to an op shop in Hamilton, bags of it, and then for the next couple of months was just seeing people wearing my clothes.
Exactly right. Liz, the idea that some items have become quite expensive. You know, it's not uncommon now. And as this email said to us, you know, they saw a pair of Converse trainers that had $50 or $60 on them. I've seen boots that are well and truly up with a couple of $100 on them, a print that'll be hundreds of dollars as well. We are seeing a recognition of what donated items' values are and price tags to match that.
Mm.
Are you getting pushback?
Well, here in Victoria, we have not changed our pricing architecture at all over the last 15 years. I've been here about 15 years. We do measure very particularly what our stores are selling across the categories are. We have had no change in the way that we price our goods. But what I have found in part is that people are really keen to donate. They're really well-loved items. So there is an increase, and we've had a lot of support. We do get a lot of support from corporates as well now, who are really keen to donate to us to ensure that, and that's big corporate, but it's also people that own their own shops, Perhaps they've got excess. Perhaps they're closing the business for one reason or other. And a good example of that is that we've just had a fabulous donation of imported Italian shoes. Now, some of the original retails on these items are up at $1,000.
Wow. Now, I'll get the details from you later, but anyhow, yes.
I can tell you more about where they'll be in a minute. But we hear a lot about, oh, you should sell them for a few dollars because you don't pay for them. But the fact of the matter is that the donor has paid for them, and the donor has made that fabulous decision in trusting Vinnie's with the on-selling of that to generate the funds that you were referring to. The need has risen incredibly exponentially over the last few years. So she would like to see, or the donor would like to see, that we honour that decision that she made and pass on those shoes.
I'm wondering about the added running costs that are now associated with running an opportunity shop. So when we look at fast fashion, there are a lot of op shops now that will have complete racks that are still, that'll say new with tags. So because clothing is just so cheap to buy new, people will often buy things, not even wear them, and then donate them. So you'll have new with tags. But also too, we know the quality of clothing is reducing in a lot of areas, and that fast fashion is one of the biggest polluters when it comes to landfill. How are opportunity shops managing the waste and the cost associated with items like that?
Well, especially those items that come in for that are new. I mean, that's a great opportunity, really, to keep that in the economy. And that's the whole purpose of an op shop, is not the whole purpose, but it's one of our primary functions in the sustainability space. And that is to ensure that these items are kept in the circular economy, so that they're not going straight to landfill when they don't have to, and that gives somebody else an opportunity at having a second bite at this.
Liz Randall, stay with us because we know you've got a pretty exciting announcement as well. Very that you're exciting. Going to share with us. Liz is from St. Vincent de Paul Society, but Leslie has called in from Rosedale. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. Great discussion, guys. Look, I'm a terminally poor pensioner and I rely on op shops for clothes, sheets, curtains, you know, household items, things that I need. And I'm finding, oh, and clothes, of course, I buy clothes there too. I'm finding that the prices in op shops are getting so expensive that some op shops are getting so expensive that I cannot afford to shop there. If I want clothes or something, sheets, whatever, I can get them cheaper at some of the larger chain stores than I can buy secondhand at op shops.
I couldn't agree more. I've noticed the same thing, Leslie. So if you needed a cheap pair of knockabout leggings for your kid, they're cheaper at Kmart than they are at your local op shop.
But Leslie,
what about some of those, like, nicer, you know, options? And we're just talking about those, you know, designer shoes. Is there something egalitarian about op shops that I've always liked, that it's, you know, $3 or $5 no matter what, and therefore it means that designer stuff is accessible to everyone if you happen to know
but
what
if the basics are, I think it's the basics that are becoming too expensive, Leslie, isn't it?
Then you betcha. Look, the word designer does not enter my vocabulary. I don't care whether it's designer or anything at op shops. That it's just it's too expensive for me, excuse me. Mm-hmm. It's much too expensive. If I look at a pair of shoes and they're designer and they're going to be $15 in an op shop, forget it. I'll go to Kmart and pay, you know, $5 on special or $4 on special for it. And look, can I mention something else too that's really bugging me?
Yeah.
I enjoy collecting bits and pieces. You know, I collect little glass and pottery jugs. I like old china, and occasionally I used to pick up a plate from my favourite designer, Alfred Meakin, who's getting hard to find now. But they only cost me a few dollars. On a pension, this is really important to people because it gives you a bit of joy in your life to think that you got this
this thing that you don't have to eat or wear. Mm. You know, it's actually something that adds joy to your life.
And they're beautiful, aren't they? I know.
They are.
And then when you feel like, Leslie, you're priced out because you've got resellers coming in or because...
You have got them and they will come in. I was eyeing off this vase the other day and I thought, my God, it's $70. There's no way. So anyway, while I'm pottering around on my walker, this man comes in and I thought, you are not an op shopper, mate. I've only got to look at you. Anyway, he stands there. He gets out his little phone. He wanders around. He picks up my vase. He grabs all sorts of other things out of the cabinets. He made a couple of phone calls to obviously a partner or a wife who was manning the shop or the stall or the wherever he was. And he walked away with well over $150 worth of really nice stuff.
And this is where it gets really complicated because, Liz, everything that Leslie's saying, I agree with 100%. But then on the flip side, that op shop has possibly just made a couple of $100 from someone who, okay, doesn't need to op shop, but that couple of $100 is then going to go and help how many people? So where do we find that balance? Because Leslie lost her vase, right? She had her eye on that vase and you sort of want her to be able to buy that vase, but at the same time you want to help all these families. How do you find that balance?
Well, it's interesting. I'd just like to make one point that 80% of the items that we sell are under $4.50. So this is something that we can have a look at in what our reporting on our sales are. So still 80%, that average sell price is still very, very low. There are exceptions. And the other thing that I'd like to mention as well is that the cost of living. In 2021-2022, the society in Victoria alone spent $4.3 million in rent and utilities and fuel and medical for those that needed our support. In 2022-2023, that's gone up to $6.4 million. So, you know, the demand is growing exponentially on that side of the coin as well. So it is about the fact that we are selling 80% of our items still at that very low price point as well. But there are exceptions and it might be that vase. And if that vase is worth more than the $4 and obviously people are prepared and it's wanted out there, then, you know, there is that need.
Now, Liz, I want you to share some really exciting news for people in Melbourne, really.
Yes.
You're trying something a little bit different.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Well, thank you. So the exciting thing is that starting opening on Thursday, ground level at the District Docklands, we have a special visitor. It's called Pop-Up by Vinnie's, and she's a new store, and we're hosting a unique pop-up event for just over 3 weeks. And we've brought this about because it will inspire our customers with the unique opportunity to buy some really special items that we've identified over the last year or so. They've been donated to us and they're very unique. And I think that what we like to do for our customers, we have a huge following here in Victoria of what we call VIPs. So we're letting them all know that we've put this product in the one space, and what we're going to be doing is opening that to the general public, and these items are like none before. And that will include some of those fabulous shoes. We've got musical instruments. I was there yesterday. I saw brand new violins, brand new saxophones. They're very, very well priced.
Oh, great. And that's something
very
that everyone
well
can experience. Everyone. And it's so called Pop-Up by Vinnie's, so people can get the details on that. It's the ground level of the Star Crescent and the District's Docklands. As we said, it's called Pop-Up by Vinnie's. Liz Randall, thank you so much for your time and explaining a little bit of that. We've got a full board of calls. People are really passionate about this. Liz is the Acting Co-Executive General Manager of Commercial Services of St. Vincent de Paul. This in Jane in Newport, it says, maybe op shops should be offering a discount to pensioners and unemployed or anyone so that everyone can benefit, so those who genuinely can't afford the high prices can buy what they need. Others saying, I'm a mum of five. I've always shopped in op shops. I need them more than now ever before, but I can't afford them, especially when you're paying $25 for a jumper. And this is from Chris, and it says, I've never met an op shop that I haven't loved. I am with you, Chris. The moment I see an op shop, if my husband doesn't stop, I'm like, well, just slow down. I have been known to move out of a moving car, right, in order to get to an op shop.
I reckon you and Leslie, the previous talkback caller, would be unstoppable together. Yeah.
What a force.
Oh, look out, Melbourne.
An absolute force. So what is their role? They're becoming more expensive in some areas. So on one hand, that's a great thing. There's more money being generated that can go back to the community and those who need it. But what if you genuinely need to go in and get a jacket? Need to get a pair of pants, you need to be able to buy sheets and cutlery, and you can't afford the prices at the op shop.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Kirsten DiProse with you as we look at the changing role that op shops play in your community. I reckon, Kirsten, there's probably a really big difference between the role of an op shop in regional Victoria as opposed to suburban Melbourne. I think, one, if you look at suburban Melbourne, you can almost take this kind of bigger umbrella view of, okay, if I choose to pay $50 or $70 for a vase like Leslie's talking about, I know that I'm donating to a charity. If you're choosing, I give some items to the op shop that I know if I could be bothered and put them onto some kind of marketplace, I'd get good money for. But I choose to give them to the op shop because I know they're going to put a big price tag on them, and I know that that's going to go to somebody, that money's going to go to somebody who needs it. But in the country, I think it would be different.
Yeah, I'm starting to think in terms of op shop ecosystems, and it's interesting looking at the text line. A few people texting in saying Salvos is generally quite expensive in Melbourne. In country areas, so I know in the southwest where I live, most are still your traditional op shop where prices are low, there's a lot of stuff, it's not necessarily organised. I know there's an op shop in Port Ferry that is a bit more organised and it's a little bit more expensive, but still not crazy. Like I said, it was news to me that Melbourne has become so expensive.
Give me an op shop that's in a town hall that's only open for a few hours on a couple of days a week. There is gold in that there op shop, right? And and it hasn't been trawled through. And if you manage to be driving through or visiting that town on the time that it is open, happy, happy days. Sue Frost is an op shop volunteer. She works at the Koroit Lions Opportunity Shop. So what makes you volunteer at your local op shop?
It's good company with the volunteers who work there and also the people who come in. It's just amazing watching what does come in and go out. It's just a really pleasant atmosphere.
And what sort of things do come into the local op shop in Koroit? Is it the only one there in the town?
There is another one in the town. Ours is extremely well supported. If we didn't sell things at reasonable prices, we'd just get snowed under with materials. So that's one thing. We keep very reasonable prices so that things keep moving, come in, go out quickly, which is a good thing.
We've had a few texts sort of saying, we wouldn't find anything for $4.50 in my local op shop. But there was one from Bendigo, for instance. What can you get for $4.50 in Koroit?
Bag full of stuff.
Four T-shirts at the minute. Couple of pairs of pants, maybe a couple of shirts. Most of our things, clothing's about $4 to $5.
Wow. I love this. I'm heading to Koroit soon.
Come and stay with Kirsten and hop out to Koroit and shop.
Oh, thanks, Sue. No, don't ask me whether I want Rochelle to stay.
Exactly. I'll teach you my ways, right, because I've got techniques. I hold them very close to my heart in terms of how you manage that. But, Sue, fundamentally, I mean, the reason why I started op shopping was because I had to, you know, and I understand that there has to also be some dignity when you're in an op shop and some respect when you're in an op shop as well for the other people who would be shopping in there and the reasons why they may be there. And just listening to the community and the community's needs as well. You're a little bit of a little bit like angels, really, in terms of just making sure that everybody's okay.
It's a really good social point in Koroit because it's a smaller town. And as you said before, a lot of people have op shopping as a hobby. They come in, it's something to do, things to discuss. So it becomes a little community. One thing that we have to be very respectful of too is often people donate when someone's deceased.
Mm.
And that's a really traumatic thing. It's a hard thing for them to do. And we have to be very respectful of that, I think.
The deceased estates, people from outside of town, I would imagine it'd be really hard to donate in the town where your loved one was and where you live.
But people do it because it's their town, it's their community, and they're very loyal to it.
Yeah. How do you sort through that sort of stuff? Because you probably end up with some personal items in there, I would imagine, too.
We do. Some, if we can, we contact whoever's donated. Like if it's something, maybe it's a personal paper or something, we try and contact the person and get it back to the family because it may have, you know, accidentally got wrapped up. If it's really personal things that we couldn't contact them, you know, if it's photos or something, papers, we may put it through the shredder. We had a really interesting one. We were going through some things and in the pocket of a man's suit coat we found some very expensive jewellery. Luckily, it had a name and phone number on it. So we rang the phone number and I asked the lady where she was to try and get it back to her, and she said she didn't know. So we found out she was actually had dementia and was in a nursing home. But we did get on to someone in the town where she lived and we got onto the family and got the jewellery back to them.
Oh, it's a little bit of detective work. Yeah. I know. I found a great pair of circa 1970 high-waisted jeans the other day at the op shop and I felt something in the pocket and I was like, oh, what's this? And I pulled them out and it was a key. And I thought, someone has searched high and low for this key, right? I had no idea how long the jeans had been in the op shop. I had no – anyway, so I took it up. I got the jeans because they were awesome. But I also took the key up to the counter and said, look, I don't know whether anyone's ever going to come back for this key, but this is a house key and someone's probably, you know, tearing their brains out. Just finally, Sue, how is the money generated then? How do you know how it's distributed to the community? How does the op shop help the community?
Well, because it is Lions Club, we put most of the money into the town. In the last 10 years, we've provided a outside gym equipment for the town and also a big undercover barbecue area. So we put a lot of money, and we also support schools, local schools. And then Lions, of course, do put things into cancer research, things like that. So most, and at the moment, because we've just completed the barbecue project, we're discussing what our next project will be. That'll be providing something for Koroit.
Sue Frost, thank you for all you do for the town and thank you for joining us on the Conversation Hour.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Sue Frost there, op shop volunteer for Koroit Lions. Let's go to the talkback line, which is nice and full. Matt is in Ballarat. Hi, Matt.
G'day.
What did you want to say?
I wanted to share a short story from 20-odd years ago when I worked in Melbourne as a youth worker. We worked for a non-government organisation and we would put kids up in housing that were homeless or at risk of homelessness. And the kids, the teenagers, could go to the op shop that was run by the same place and get anything for free, so like bedding or they needed crockery or cutlery or clothes. And it was often around making sure that the young person, you know, that those two words that you mentioned, dignity and respect, but then also showing respect to the staff that might not have all understood that that was a rule, that teenagers could come in with a worker and collect things they needed. So.
Yeah, lots of people have got ideas, Matt, that are coming through saying surely there's a way, you know, now if you show a pension card or just some kind of, identification in some way, but again, do it in a way that's subtle and full of dignity and respect so that you don't have to pay those prices, or there can be, maybe there's an allocation of X amount that you're allowed to spend, especially if you need those basic items. Coral's in Williamstown. Good morning.
Good morning, Rochelle.
What did you want to share?
My concern was I had a back issue and had to get rid of a couch and an easy chair. And so I rang the Salvation Army and they were happy to come and have a look at it. Now, the material was white fabric. And so where the arm covers finished and the rest of the arm was, it was grubby. But there were no tears, no rips, no anything. It was in perfect condition and it would have been kept used except that my back problem meant I couldn't get out of it. So they really made me feel ashamed.
Oh,
they
I'm
said,
sorry
"That's
to hear
filthy.
That.
We can't possibly sell that." I said, "Oh, well, I actually hope that you might give it away to somebody."
Yeah, well, hopefully there's someone that you know that you can give that couch to. And I'm sorry that was your experience. But what Coral's raised of interest to me there, Kirsten, is when you look at, like, someone came to potentially pick up that couch, right? So when we look at added costs that are onto op shops now, so you've got petrol, you've got a truck, and we know that trucks cost a lot of money when we have, you know, looked at what I think the trucks cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to be able to purchase and keep and be able to run. You've got staff or volunteers in order to pick that up. So when we look at the running costs of what it takes to keep an op shop up and running now, depending on the service that they offer, there's a lot that goes to it.
Mm, exactly. Lucien Tonti is an author of Sundressed, and can tell us more a bit about fast fashion in op shops, because we've got so many text messages talking about the dumping of stuff mm-hmm. and about how there's just a lot of cheap clothes now rather than those great designer or just good quality pieces. Lucien, thank you for joining us.
No, thanks so much for having me. And yeah, you're spot on. I mean, you know, fast fashion kind of started in the 90s and has really picked up pace in the last kind of two decades. And so we are looking at op shops that have an influx of garments that don't actually have a value on the resale market or have much value on the resale market. And it is a huge burden to op shops to be receiving donations that they can't on-sell. And so we know the latest AFC report said that 190,000 tonnes of textiles are donated to charities every year in Australia, and about 105,000 of those are exported offshore because we can't actually use them here. So it's more than half that's, you know, going to countries like India, Bangladesh, the UAE, Ghana, and it does reflect the decline in quality of our clothes across the board.
I remember, and this was years ago, speaking to one of the op shop managers about how people treat donations. So not everyone is, maybe their heart is in the right place, but not always. But it's almost treated like I'm going to offload stuff that I don't want. It may not be the right quality. It may be broken. It may not, you know, it may be stained and dirty. And it's just used as a dumping ground. I'll chuck it out the front of the op shop late at night, and then it's somebody else's problem. It's out of my hair now. And that comes at a cost to the op shop, but fundamentally it comes at a cost to the community, because resources and money that the op shop should be spending on families and individuals that need it is being spent to deal with all this rubbish that's being dumped on at the front.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we're all guilty of it. You know, you want to do a wardrobe clean out, you feel guilty about throwing clothes in the bin, and you don't really know what else to do with them. We don't have proper avenues to recycle clothing in Australia. And what it does mean is that, like, for a lot of us, you know, I know that I've done it. You just think, okay, I want this out of sight, out of mind, and off it's going to go to the op shop. And really, only the things that we should be giving to op shops are things that we would be happy to gift to family or friends or to receive as gifts ourselves. So nothing stained, nothing dirty, nothing with a broken zipper or, you know, a big hole in it, nothing pills, and keep that bar really high. And the other garments that you have that are no longer really useful to anybody, if you have purchased something of inferior quality or you've worn something just into the ground, you know, if the garment is made of absorbent natural fibres, you can cut it up and use it as rags around the house, that's a great avenue instead of dumping it in an op shop. Or alternatively, there is a wonderful company called Apparel that downcycles used clothing waste into insulation and boards and other things like that. And they will collect for a fee, a small fee. I think it's like $20 or something.
That's fantastic. That was going to be my next question, because it's when you do have those cheap clothes, and particularly when you've got kids, you know, my kids go through shorts like nothing else. God, and, you know, I end up, they'll get a big rip in them, and I often end up throwing them out. And I know that's not good because it ends up in landfill, and that's not great either, really, in the long term. I can't give them to the op shop.
No, and I mean, in some ways, throwing them in the bin, like ideally what we would have in Australia and everywhere is a dedicated waste stream for textiles, mm. like we have for paper and glass and metal and, you know, everything else. And then, you know, we would be developing the proper infrastructure to be able to process clothing waste rather than leaving it to charities. And this is something that the Australian Fashion Council has been working on for the last 18 months. They've set up a body called Seamless. Tanya Plibersek's been really calling out, trying to get the rest of the fashion industry to come on board with really figuring out what a plan for circularity in the Australian fashion industry and for textiles looks like. And it is exciting to think that, you know, we might come up with better options, because these, you know, textiles are really valuable. A lot of work goes into making them soft and silky and beautiful. And it is a sad state of affairs when we've, you know, now making them so cheaply, and they're so cheap to replace, that it is the best option to throw something in the bin.
And you'd hope that we make change. We know that there's some big changes that are happening in France. They're looking at changing regulations and laws around fast fashion. And I think Australia, it just needs to follow suit. And I don't think we think about textiles as waste in the same way we do other items. And it's that thought process that needs to change.
Fascinating.
Just finally, Lucianne, the role of reselling and marketplaces. So that's probably died off a little bit as people are concerned about identity and scams and whatnot. But did you see a shift in dynamic of people not giving stuff to the op shop, maybe trying to sell it on certain marketplaces? Are you seeing people now still op shopping and trying to resell? And do you have issues with that? The whole kind of moving on and selling on?
No, I think the resale market is a really wonderful, thriving place. And, you know, whether it's Facebook Marketplace or Depop or eBay, or, you know, there's more upmarket platforms like Vestiaire Collective, those are really great avenues to get your clothes to somebody who really wants them and who is going to cherish them and wear them. And it's also a much, you know, people use it to make money. Like, that's a fabulous output in the kind of circularity space for our used garments. Of course, it's more time consuming, and you have to be willing to go to the post office, and, you know, and also, you know, of course, if you're scared about identity fraud, make sure that you're putting things in place. And I think using verified apps like Depop or eBay are kind of safer avenues perhaps than some other ones, but certainly what we want, you want to be finding a home for these clothes that are useful to people, where someone's going to love them and really enjoy wearing them. And no matter what that avenue is, you know, I know a lot of people who advocate for clothes swaps between their friends, and those can be really exciting community events as well, where, you know, just rather than buying something new, you know, come together with your girlfriends and have some, open a bottle of wine and, like, you know, do a trade of, and not of things that you're sick of things that maybe you're just not actually wearing that much at the moment. And, you know, and that's another really great way we can extend the use of our clothes. And that's
that circular economy.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Lucianne Tonti, author of Sundressed, with a lot of ideas there. 1300 222 774. Robin has called in from Gippsland.
Morning, Robin. Great program. I'm talking about our wonderful community shopping in Garfield. When the fires were on up here in Gippsland, the people registered, they went in and they got free clothing. Did they get free clothing, but they got money as well. So, I mean, that's what a community shop does. And I'd also like to say, when people put knives in packages that they're sending to the op shops or community shops, please don't leave them with the blade standing up.
Yes, wrap them up. Good point, Robin. Thank you. In the beautiful area of Garfield, this is just one of the hundreds of texts that has come in. The Red Hill Op Shop has donated over $1 million in the last 10 to 15 years to our local palliative care service that I work for. That's from Annie. And others say, I have great fun with my grandchildren. It's what we call the sharing shop, because sometimes we buy something, other times we take or make a donation, whatever toys that must be shared with siblings. The team sharing shop has become very popular with friends and family. That's from Julie in Hampton. When I dragged my husband into our local op shop the other day, he was quite surprised that the woman that worked there knew my daughter and I by first name, and that we were just having a good old chat.
Of course.
So has your local op shop become too expensive, and what role does it play? How is that money used? How does it help your community? Well, on Sammy J, for our Melbourne listeners, a local found something in an op shop that pretty much changed their life.
Mate, g'day, Sammy. I was dropping off some old toys and clothes, as you do, to a local, you know, one of those charity thrift stores, and there was a watch in one of the glass cases. I'm like, oh, you know, young fella would love to. He's always wanting, you know, to pretend he's got a Rolex. So he's 10. I'll get him this Rolex at a price tag of $2. Got it home. I was holding it. I'm like, this doesn't feel right. It felt, you know, felt heavier than a fake watch would. It had all the serial numbers. Went to the store and they took it away for testing. 2 weeks later, I got a call to say, sir, this is a real watch, estimated at about $50,000.
Oh my goodness. A real Rolex valued at 50. What's your obligation there, right? Your moral compass to somehow give some of the, if you decide to sell,
yeah.
Do you give like 50 grand, right?
What? Yeah, give 10 grand back to the op shop.
10 grand, that's where your compass is at?
Yeah, I think so. Why, what's yours?
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I like that straight away you knew, though. A fifth. Oh,
yeah.
A fifth.
Given it back. I think that's fair. 10 grand's a lot of money.
10 grand is a lot of money. And that, anything could have happened with that. He kept the watch. And gave the shop $500. There we go. I just got some intel.
$500. Oh, so that makes me feel like I'm not such a horrible person.
But he kept the watch, right? He didn't sell it. He didn't make any profit from it.
Oh, I'd sell the watch. Yeah right.
Cruising around with a Rolex. Becca Hannah is someone that knows op shops very well. She's a keen Melbourne op shopper and an artist, and has a site that's called Melbourne Op Shoppers. Becca, I can't believe we don't know each other. What changes have you noticed when it comes to the prices in op shops?
I think the prices in most op shops, particularly around Melbourne, have gone up significantly, particularly after COVID. I don't know whether it's the joy and excitement people had getting back to op shops and they became more popular, or what's going on exactly.
Now, Becca, you're also an artist, which I think is something we should touch on, because there's a few, people in the art world use op shops.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the really popular op shops in Brunswick, well, it's no longer in Brunswick, there's Savers is right next to RMIT University, and they have, as part of their curriculum, fashion students, and they used to send the fashion students to the op shop to collect materials in order to create their work, which I think is really a positive use for the op shop.
How did you get started? Like, does your op shop story run deep?
I have been a very keen op shopper for a very long time, probably from university days when I really didn't have much money. So getting things for a bargain at the op shop was a way of, you know, having furniture and homewares and that sort of thing.
What do you head to first? Like, are you shoes? Are you crockery?
I'm crockery. Mm. I collect willow pattern crockery and trying to get a dinner set, and then textiles. So I do a lot of making my own clothes and making banners and artworks and things.
And does the first things first, do you size up your competition that's in there like I do? Like, figure out whether or not you've
Absolutely.
Got time?
Yeah. If someone looks like they're making a beeline for what I'm after for the craft section, I'm going to go there first.
Absolutely. Good on you. Thanks, Becca. Cheryl Mudge is also a reseller and has a site that's called The Mum, The Kids and The Wardrobes. Cheryl, what role have op shops played in your life, and what role do they play now?
I guess I've turned my love of op shopping into my business. So I've loved op shopping since I was little. I used to go to lots of op shops in England. I grew up in England with my mum. And now, yeah, I just love op shopping, turned it into my business.
Do you find there's a bit of pushback on that? We've had a few messages and comments about resellers. You know, all the good stuff gets bought up and then sold for more.
Yeah.
Where do you sit on that?
Definitely I see an increase in, I guess it's called trolling, so different sort of negative comments around resellers. So people think, you know, they've got the impression that resellers are buying all the best things. I think op shops are full, most of the ones that I know of things. It's just the skill in looking for it, I guess, in searching and knowing what to look for. But I think there's enough to go around.
Yeah, and I think you've touched on something there, which is the skill. Cheryl, thank you. Cheryl Mudge there, a reseller of pre-loved vintage small things. Her site is called The Mum, The Kids and The Wardrobe. It's a skill, Kirsten Dipro. It's a reason why you don't like it is because I haven't passed on my knowledge to you yet.
Like, I'm happy to go on websites that are for, you know, putting up pre-loved stuff because someone's had to go and find that and make it look good and appealing. And I think there is a skill in that. I mean, you've got an eye for it and can do all of the steps. But I just...
There's just three basic steps, right? Figure out what you're going in for.
Okay, so you shop with a purpose.
You shop with a purpose. Well, sometimes you've got it. Sometimes something will just present itself to you. Be like, you know what? I didn't come in for a pair of jeans, but I just found the perfect pair of jeans. Size up your competition. There's someone else in there that's looking for the same stuff as you, and go to all the key things that you want to go to first, and look for fabric. Right? If it's clothes, you know, like you can tell at a quick glance. And the more cluttered, the more chance you've got of finding yourself an absolute ripper.
All right. Well, maybe I'll have a go with your step-by-step process and tell me if I can find something. I mean, there's nothing like the feeling of finding something. I was telling you about a beautiful work skirt that I got for $9 that would have been $150 easily.
And you have to be prepared to leave empty-handed. This is what I say to my daughter. Don't buy junk, right? Don't clutter up your own house. You have to be prepared to leave empty-handed. That day was just not your day, right?
Oh, you've got a whole philosophy, Rochelle's philosophy to op shopping. This is a book. This is so much bigger.
Don't forget, The Conversation Hour is also a podcast. Go to the ABC Listen app. Talk tomorrow.